So session 29, Deuteronomy, in my top five favorite books of the whole Bible. I love Deuteronomy. And again, we use the Greek word. Deutero, of course, comes from second. It's the second law. It can also mean a copy of the law. In Hebrew, it's Devarim, which comes from the beginning there where it says, these are the words that Moses spoke. Devarim means the words. It's a summary of everything, except this is, the focus of the book is Moses doing the talking rather than God doing the talking. And it's dated just as the people are about to enter the land. It's like the last 2 months of the 40 years of wandering. And we talked, I think, last time, too, is, remember, everybody who was, the only people left that are going to go into the land are people who were less than 20 when they left Egypt, not counting Joshua and Caleb. Moses is going to die later in the book, too. So they're the only two sort of older people. And so when you think about it, the people that left 20 years ago are now 60. And, you know, they're going to go into the land. And everybody else who's going to go into the land was, you know, either a really little kid when they left Egypt or they were born in the desert. And when you think about 40 years wandering, there were a lot of people that were born while they were wandering and a lot of people who died while they were wandering. Finding, you know, cemetery space wasn't a problem. Now they can see the land. Moses is going to get a special look at it, but now they can see the land right across the Jordan. So it's kind of like Moses writing a commentary about the law and about the wanderings that they've done. You know, you have in Judaism, you have a lot of commentaries on the scripture, the Talmud and the Mishnah and all this, where people write commentaries. So this is kind of like Moses writing a commentary about everything that happened to them from the time they left Egypt. So he's kind of summarizing everything just before they go into the land. Because he wants people to know we're finally here in all the stuff that God's been telling us, in all this stuff that I've been showing you, in all this stuff that you've seen. It all points to this, going into the land. And the New Testament version of this, of course, is we going into the ultimate promised land, which is heaven. So as you're about to go into heaven, look at it as, you know, you look back and you think, wow, all that stuff that I learned and all that stuff I did and all the things that I knew I was supposed to do, and now I'm getting ready to go in, getting ready to die and getting ready to go in. They're going into the physical promised land. And the writer to the Hebrews talks about how they wandered in the wilderness to go to the promised land. We are wandering in the wilderness, which is our lives, heading for the ultimate promised land, which is heaven. So the promised land was a foreshadowing of heaven. There's all the, you know, imagery of, you know, milk and honey and fruit trees and stuff and, you know, plenty of everything. And when you think about it, you know, from our point of view, you know, we're so spoiled with stuff, you know, like we're just talking about giant eagle. I mean, any supermarket you walk into, I mean, there's so much stuff there. I mean, these people actually, like, if they thought about a place where there was like plenty of everything, they would have thought they would be in heaven. I mean, they were just trying to like live. So it's kind of like the same idea. They looked at plenty as being a symbol of heaven. After all, you know, heaven's called the marriage feast. It's called the marriage feast, which is kind of neat. And so he's going to remind them of all the covenant, the covenant that God made. And also, he's going to keep reminding them that they're going to go into a land where they're going to encounter pagans. They're going to encounter non-believers. And, you know, we have Well, actually, we've become kind of a pagan land. But, now we have people of faith going into our society where, you're influenced by all these people that are basically pagans. Yeah. I mean, we wouldn't call them pagans. They wouldn't call themselves pagan, but you know what I mean. They don't have the system of faith that you have. So as God tells them, don't be influenced by the people that you're going to meet. It's hard for us to tell kids and grandkids and, don't be influenced by the people you meet, because you're going to work with them. You're going to visit with them. You're going to go out to eat with them. You're going to hang out in the backyard with them. But, we're going to see soon where God's going to say to them, when you look up in the sky, you're going to be tempted to worship the sun and the moon and the stars. But don't worship them, because I made them. Because that was the natural thing that pagans did. So they're going to be, they've been exposed to that. And then, of course, what's going to happen, chapter 6 is going to become the center. Deuteronomy 6 is the center of all of Judaism, which is the Shema, which is, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Deuteronomy 6, 4, but that's the next lesson. And then after that comes a long section called the Via Hafta, which we do on Friday nights in Parma, but we'll go over it. Next lesson is, I think, just about the Shema and the Via Hafta. But the Shema separated them from all the other people, because they're the only ones that had the belief in the one God, in the one true God. So that's why the Shema means Hear, O Israel. And it doesn't just mean listen, it means hear and understand that there's one God, the Lord is one. And so that's the one of the critical things about this whole book. And so if we look at chapter 1, and we're not going to read all this, but you see at the beginning, these are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel beyond the Jordan in the wilderness, in the Arabah, over against Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hazroth, and Dizhab. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb by way of Mount Seir to Kadesh Barnea. So in other words, they could have made this whole trip in 11 days. And see there, it says, in verse 3, it says, the 40th year, the first day of the 11th month. So it's 39 whole years and 11 months, because it's 11 months of the 40th year. So it's 40 complete years they're going to go into the land after the spies. Well, actually, I'm sorry, from Mount Sinai to where they are now would have been 11 days. From Egypt, it would have been, a little bit more. But, 14, 15, 20 days is a lot different than 40 years. So, big difference. Now, let's go down to verses 5 through 8 of chapter 1. Anybody?
Lord our God said to us,
go and possess the land. Now, they never got as far as the Euphrates. In fact, there's a couple other places where the land is defined as the river of Egypt to the Euphrates, which would be the Nile to the Euphrates, and Iraq. So it's, a few hundred miles east. But anyway, he says, I'm giving you this land. I promised this land to your fathers. So just go in and take it. And don't worry about anything else. You're just going to go in and take it. Because I promised it to your fathers, I've taken care of you all this time, and I set this law before you. So don't worry about how you're going to do it, just be ready to do it. And we've seen how many times they've rebelled over the years. And it's no different than what we do. Because let's face it, when some crisis happens, there's very few people that say, well, I'm sure the Lord will just take care of this for us, so I'm not going to. We all get frazzled. And we may, you know, pray and ask other people to pray, and we may come to our senses later. But that's your first reaction isn't, oh, the Lord will just take care of this. So, you know, they rebelled. We're the same. Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun. We're all people. There's nothing different. You know, we tend to think of, you know, people tend to think of ancient people as, you know, being stupid. I mean, they're not stupid. They just don't know as much stuff as we do. Their intelligence level's the same. And when you think about it, you know, here they are. There's the river. There's the land. There's lots of people living in that land. They've lived there for, you know, hundreds of years. They got fortified cities. They got armies. They got, oh, and God says, just go in because I'm giving you the land. And you go, ooh, okay. Can't we just stay camped here for a while to think this over? And then, yes, let's go ahead from 9. From verse 9. So, you notice this is Moses talking. This is not God talking. Moses is talking in the first person. This is the difference from the other four books of the Torah. And so Moses is kind of recounting everything. And he reminds them, look how God has multiplied you. Which, of course, goes back to the promise to Abraham. So what's the promises? Descendants, land, and all the nations of the earth will be blessed through you. So he's going to say, look, you got descendants because he's multiplied you. There's the land. We're going to go in. And in about, you know, 2,000 years, all the nations of the earth will be blessed through you when Jesus is born. He doesn't understand that yet, but that's the third promise, and that's why we're here, because we're in the nations. We're not covenant people. We're part of the nations, but we're blessed because of Abraham. So Moses is telling them, you know, all this stuff, and then he recounts the wandering. He recounts how, you know, the 10 of the people that went to scout the land, the 10 spies, didn't believe God. And that's why we're still wandering. You know, you picked leaders, and you know, you're going to have to pick more leaders when you get to the land, and you want to pick good leaders who have your interests and God's interests at heart. You know, don't pick leaders that don't have that. So he's kind of like teaching them all this because they're going into the land. We can't really appreciate that. But imagine if you were, you know, 40 at this time. You know, if you were 40 years old at this time, and you were born, you know, the month after they left Egypt, all you knew was being in the wilderness. And now somebody says, we're going into the land, and you're like, okay, I don't know, what does that mean? What's that going to be like? Or you're going to say, you know, I heard about this for 40 years and I don't really believe it's going to happen. And he's going to talk about, you know, all through this, and you know, you can read this for your homework, as I always like to say. You know, the Lord's always been with you while we've been doing this. You see the Shekinah. You see the manna come. You see water come when you need it. You see, like, enemies fall before you. You see, whatever you need to live, it's provided. He's been with you all this time. And now, there's the land. Like, you know, right where those houses are. There's the river. There's the land. So, that's pretty cool. And, you know, he goes through a whole thing in chapters 1 and 2 about how God always fought for them. And just like he fought for you when you encountered all these people, he's going to fight for you when you're over there encountering people. I know you can see Jericho over there with big walls around it, but not to worry. The walls will come down. Reminds me of Paul Wilbur's song. The walls will come down with a shout of praise. You're just, all you're going to have to do is shout, and the walls are going to fall down. But if somebody tells you that as a human, you say, really? Yeah, yeah, or I'm going to shout and the wall's going to fall down? I don't think so. And it's, you know, it all, it, and even, you know, there's so many New Testament parallels, but, you know, the cross is the ultimate thing. People say, really? Some man died on a cross 2,000 years ago and that has something to do with me? Are you kidding me? You really believe that? Because it doesn't make any sense. Remember, 1 Corinthians, Paul says the cross is foolishness to those that are perishing. And when, you know, Joshua says, you know, we're going to go around, you're going to shout, the walls are going to fall down. There were probably people that went, uh-huh, right. Too bad we don't have a video of that. And the wall didn't just crumble, it came down like a blind. So, all this was to prepare you to go over there. This is it. This is the climax. Just like our Christian life is all preparing us to go over there, hopefully, and not over there. One of the ways we know how important this is remember when the rich guy and Lazarus the beggar, and the rich guy says, you know, I don't want my brothers to end up here, so why don't you send Lazarus back to them? In other words, give them a sign. And what does Abraham tell him? They have Moses and the prophets. If you don't believe Moses and the prophets, you won't believe that somebody will rise from the dead. Such a powerful teaching that Yeshua Jesus does there. Moses and the prophets. This is the key. Moses and the prophets was all about him. If you don't believe Moses and the prophets, you're not going to believe that he rose from the dead. So we're going to go forward to chapter 3. Because you can, you know, the recounting in the wilderness, you know, we've been through a lot of that. There's only so much stuff we can recount. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that in Timothy, 2 Timothy, did we do Timothy's here? No. But anyway, in 2 Timothy, Paul, you know, Timothy's his mentor, is his student, his disciple. Paul's his mentor, calls him his son all the time. And he tells Timothy, you know, you're a young guy and you have a lot of responsibility. And he says, you know, you have to teach and you have to keep learning yourself the same things so that you can teach them. So in other words, it doesn't matter how many times you read Deuteronomy, you need to know that to teach somebody something about it. You know, in Philippians, he says, I don't ever get tired of writing the same things to you over and over again because it's important. People always say to me, aren't you tired of talking about Moses? I never. Never. I can't wait to start the next one. Because it's the, if you do something over and over again, it makes the knowledge more firm. And it gives you a better way to explain it to somebody who doesn't know it.
See the statue from all angles.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So in chapter 3, we're still recounting things. But let's go down to verse 24. This is all about, you know, up to this point, he's talked about the wandering, about the, some of the battles, about how God's provided for them. And then somebody read chapter 3, verse 24 and following.
Oh, Lord God, you have begun to show to your servant for what God in heaven or earth formed you. Let me cross over and see this good land beyond the Jordan, fine hill country, and Lebanon. Lord was angry with me on your account and would not hear me. Enough, the Lord said to me. No more of this. Go up to the top of Pisgah and look out to the west, south, and to the east. Look well, for you shall not cross this Jordan. Commission Joshua and encourage and strengthen him, for he shall cross at the head of this people, shall put them in possession of the land you are to see. This was while we were in the ravine opposite Beth Peor.
Yeah, so we kind of went over that. Moses pleads again. Oh, Lord, you know, you did all these awesome things. Who else could do all these things that you've done? And can't I just go over and see this land? And God gets angry with him and says, no, you can't. So you got to pick, you got to come in. We did this already in Numbers. Commission Joshua. He's going to take the people into the land. So Moses pleads with God. God says, nope. But he said, no, in a firm way.
Enough.
Enough. Yeah, he doesn't want to.
No,
he doesn't want to hear about it anymore. And it's cool. It's like, you know, what God is there on heaven or earth that can do anything like you do? That can do your mighty deeds? At least to another Hebrew pair called the Mika Mocha, which sounds like a flavor at Starbucks, but
yeah, it does.
But it partly comes from this and from a couple of other verses. Which basically means there is none like you. And it's a song to Mika Mocha Belis Adonai. Who is like you among the gods? Who can do the mighty works that you do? You know, they encountered other gods. You know, in Isaiah and in Jeremiah, God kind of makes fun of people who make gods out of wood and stone and says, you know, in the Psalms too, that goes into that. It's like you got to. They got all these things, you know, they got eyes they can't see, they got ears and they can't hear. They got feet but they can't walk. They got. And if you believe in them as your gods, you're going to end up just like them. So do you want, you know, do you want to be with me who's the real God who's going to take you over there, or do you want to be like these, you know, inanimate things that these people think are gods? Not much of a choice in my mind. None of those idols could have ever brought manna down or, you know, defeated enemies in battle. So in chapter 4, it goes to, you know, you follow the law, you follow these statutes that we've learned, and you're going to possess the land and you're going to do well. There's another great line here. Actually, start reading at the beginning of 4.
Now, Israel, hear the statutes which I am teaching you. You may live in the possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. Servants of the commandments of the Lord your God, which join upon you, subtract from it. You have seen with your own eyes what the Lord did. Lord, your God, destroyed from everyone followed Baal of Peor. But you, who clung to the Lord, your God, are all alive today. For I teach you statutes and decrees as the Lord my God has commanded, that you may observe them. Serve them carefully, for thus will give evidence of your wisdom and intelligence to the nations who will hear all of the statutes and say, this great nation is truly a wise and intelligent. For what great nation is there that is God so close to as the Lord our God is to us whenever we call it? For what great nation has statutes and decrees that are as just as this whole law?
Isn't that cool? Is that cool or what? So it's follow the laws, you'll possess the land. You can't add or subtract to what I've told you. You know, what do we have churches doing now? Oh, I don't think God really means that. You know, maybe he meant that at one time. But I'm sure he doesn't mean that now. You know, you can't add or subtract. So that's very powerful. You know, it's in Revelation, it says anybody who adds or takes away from this book is going to be condemned. You know, God doesn't want his word changed. And, you know, these, you saw what happened to these people who didn't follow. The people who went to worship Baal were all killed. The people that went and brought the Moabites to the sanctuary, 24,000 of them died. So this is not, this is something you have to keep in mind. And, you know, as a society, when you lose the sense of sin and you think, well, no matter what we do, you know, God is love and God's going to love everybody. We don't have to worry about it anymore. You know, you're really walking on thin ice. So don't add or subtract. And then he says, you know, what nation is there that has God so close that when you call him, he's there. You can see him there in the cloud. You see him provide stuff for you every day. You see him cut your enemies down in front of you. When I go talk to him, I come out and my face is glowing. You think any of those pagan priests do that? So look what you have. You know, what nation has such statutes and righteous judgments that are in this law? You guys are we're the only ones that have it. So don't depart from it. You know, the church has fullness of truth, has salvation. You know, why would you depart from it? And say, well, you know, some of the other stuff is okay too. Why can't we all just get along? You know, that's kind of the idea. And I'm sure there were people here at this time with Moses probably saying, well, you know, some of these Canaanite gods, we don't even know who they are yet, but, you know, they might be interesting too. Maybe they can help us out doing something. Moses says, you guys are the only ones that have this. So don't screw it up. You can always say it says screw it up, but if you read the ancient languages. And then one other line here. Verse 6, keep them and do them, for that will be your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples. Okay, other peoples who, when they hear these statutes, will say, wow, this is a great nation and an understanding people. So in other words, people who don't believe in God are going to see how you behave and are going to say, wow. That's not really happening now, but but it was. But I mean, you know, this is why they got the idea of they were supposed to be a light to the Gentiles, which Simeon carries on in the presentation, where he says, you know, this child's the glory of Israel and a light to the Gentiles. They were supposed to be the light to the Gentiles as well. So when these crazy pagan Gentiles see the way you guys live and that God takes care of you, they're going to say, wow, that's cool. Let's go down to start reading again at 11.
You came near and stood at the foot of the mountain, which blazed to the very sky with fire and was enveloped in a dense black cloud. Then the Lord spoke to you from the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of the words, but saw no form. There was only a voice. He proclaimed to you his covenant, which he, the Ten Commandments, which he wrote on two tablets of stone. The Lord charged me at the time to teach you statutes and decrees which you are to observe over in the land you will occupy.
Go ahead. Yeah.
You saw no form at all on the day the Lord spoke to you at Horeb from the midst of the fire. Be strictly on your guard, therefore, not to degrade yourselves by fashioning an idol to represent any figure, whether it be the form of a man or a woman, or of an animal on the earth, or of any bird that flies in the sky, of anything that crawls on the ground, or any fish in the waters under the earth. And when you look up to the heavens and behold the sun or the moon or any star among the heavenly hosts, do not be led astray into adoring them and serving them. The Lord, your God, has let fall to the lot of all other nations under the heavens. But you he has taken and led out of that iron foundry, Egypt, that you might be his very own people, as you are today.
I'll say a pause there. So, as you're remembering this, when you saw all the things I did, you never saw a form. You never saw a body. You never saw any kind of a form of anything. So don't carve anything. Don't make any idols. Don't make any graven images. Don't make carved images, because you're going to be tempted to do that. And when you look up in the sky, you're going to be tempted to worship the sun and the moon. I mean, every primitive culture had sun gods and moon gods, and all of, you know, we still have the constellations, and the ancients had stories about, you know, all of them, because that's what they did. But God says, you don't do that. It's okay to name the constellation, but I made all that stuff. So when you get tempted to worship the sun or some heavenly body, don't do it. Oh, and besides, I delivered you out of Egypt, which he calls a furnace or a forge. I delivered you out of there. You know, a forge is a foundry, is a place where you form something. And then I took you out of there, and I made you my people, and you're my possession. So you're my possession, I'm your inheritance. So, you know, don't forget all the stuff I told you. And here, go ahead, start reading there.
Since the Lord was angered against me on your account and swore that I should not cross the Jordan nor enter the good land which he is giving you as a heritage, I myself shall die in this country without crossing the Jordan. But you will cross over and take possession of that good land. Take heed, therefore, lest forgetting the covenant which the Lord your God has made with you, you fashion for yourselves against an idol in any form whatsoever, for the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God.
Whew. So this is there's two places in the Bible where God's called a consuming fire. This is one of them, the other one's in Hebrews. But God's a jealous God, a consuming fire. And when you break these laws, there's going to be consequences, like a consuming fire, because you're his inheritance. And then read down a little bit here, and it tells you what, start at 25.
Okay. When you have children and grandchildren grown old in the land, should you then degrade yourself by fashioning an idol in any form and by this evil done in sight provoke the Lord your God? I call heaven and earth this day to witness against you, that you shall all quickly perish from the land which you will occupy when you cross the Jordan. You shall not live in it for any length of time. You shall be promptly wiped out. The Lord will scatter you among the nations. There shall remain but a handful of you. The Lord will lead you. There you shall serve gods fashioned by the out of wood and stone, gods which can neither see nor hear nor smell, yet thereto shall seek the Lord. You shall indeed find him. Search after him, whole heart and your whole soul. Your distress, when all these things shall have come upon you, shall finally return to God. Lord your God is a merciful God. He will not abandon or destroy you or forget the covenant under oath he made with
your fathers. Okay. So here's what he's saying. Now, when you get to the land, you have children, you have grandchildren, and you forget my law. You start making statues, you start forgetting the law. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to be banished from the land. Exile. The northern kingdom was exiled 722 B.C., Southern Kingdom was exiled 586 B.C. Why were they exiled? Because they worshipped false gods. If you read, you know, Amos and first parts of Isaiah with the northern kingdom, and then you read Jeremiah and Ezekiel for the southern kingdom, even the priests were worshiping idols. And God shows these prophets what's going on in the temple. So he says, everything's going to be destroyed. And you're exiled from the land. So basically, when you break laws, there's consequences. When you break a big law, like you start worshiping idols, then you're exiled out of the land. The land is utterly destroyed. You're out of the land. But if you turn back to me, I'll take you back. So this is a great prefigurement of the Messiah, of Jesus. You know, you can be in any kind of messy sin and, you know, whatever you want to call it. But if you turn and come back, I'll take you back. Like the prodigal son, you can come back smelling like pigs. And you spent all the money and you squandered everything and you're a mess. But you can come back. This is critical. Because when the people go into exile from Judah in 586 BC, they come back. The northern kingdom never comes back because they never repented. They became the Samaritans eventually. And they were a mess. They had the books of the Torah, but they believed it in a different way. They believed there were multiple gods and their God was, you know, God here, but over there, you know, they have a God who's maybe just as good as our God. And in North Ridgeville, they got another God that's just as powerful as this God and that God. So, you know, whatever God y'all want to worship is okay, but we'll worship this God. And they didn't believe any of the prophecies. They didn't have a, like, messianic kind of outlook on things. And so that's why the Jews hated them, and they would walk around Samaria. That's why when Jesus goes to encounter the woman at the well, it's revolutionary. Because he says to the disciples, we have to go through Samaria, and they don't want to do it. Because they hated the Samaritans. Even the Samaritan woman says, why are you asking me for a drink? You're a man and a Jew. Why are you even talking to me? They had nothing to do with each other. They'd rather walk around. It took twice as long to get to Jerusalem because you had to walk all the way around instead of straight down. So, but you can turn back, because if you make these idols, you're going to be just like the people that worship them. But you can come back. And when you say we want to come back, I'll take you back. Now down to, this is awesome too. Somebody else read, start reading in 32. Because this is Moses lecturing the people about why they should take this seriously.
Ask now in the days of old, before your time, ever since God created man upon the earth. Ask from one end of the sky to the other. Did anything so great ever happen before? Was it ever heard of? Did a people ever hear the voice of God speaking from the midst of fire? Or did any god venture to go and take a nation for himself from the midst of another by signs and wonders, by war, strong hand, and by great terrors, all of which the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your very eyes? All this you were allowed to see, though the Lord is God and is no other. Out of the heavens, he let you hear his voice, discipline you. On earth, he let you see his great fire. You heard him speak. For love of your fathers, he led you out of Egypt by his great power, driving out of your way nations greater and mightier than you, so as to bring you in and to make their land your heritage. As it is today. This is why you must now know and fix it in your heart. The Lord is God in the heavens above the earth and
on the earth below, and that there is no other.
Woo.
You must keep the statutes and commandments which I enjoin on you today, you and your children, after you may prosper, and that you may have a long life on the land the Lord your God is giving you forever.
Okay, so look what he summarizes there. In all the days of history, have you ever heard of such a thing? Where a nation has a God, has God so close to it, where he took a nation out of another nation. Has that ever happened any other time? No, never happened. And this is all done for you. Did any other people hear the voice of God talking to somebody? Talking out of fire, talking from the mountain? No. You're the only ones that got to experience this. Did you ever see, was anybody else ever delivered with a mighty hand where enemies were defeated, where things were provided for, driving out nations greater than yourself? All this was done for you. So keep his commandments. Nobody else has this. You know, and as the church, you know, nobody else has what we have. Yes, so we take it for granted, or we say, well, I don't know. Is that really, I don't know. Does that still mean that, and does this still mean this? And what about the people over there? They're doing something fun. And so same idea. Like, you know, maybe we could hang around with some Buddhists, and, you know, they can teach us something too. Yeah. So no, nobody else has this. He took a nation out of a nation and then protected it. You know, and Isaiah is going to say, can a nation be born in one day? And the answer is yes. So you see, this is Moses telling them this was all done for you. This is all done before your eyes. You've never heard of such a thing. Voices from heaven, signs and wonders, deliverance. And you're going to a land of inheritance that's going to be yours. So Moses set all of this before them, along with the law, and said, pay attention to this because we're going in. See there in 44. This is the law which Moses set before the children of Israel. That's said every Saturday morning in the synagogue. They lift the Torah up. Everybody points to the Torah and says, this is the Torah given by Moses to the children of Israel at the command of the Lord by Moses' hand. He wrote all of it down. So how cool is that? Nobody else has this. You know, so he's like, are you guys paying attention? Is there any part of this you guys don't catch? You know, do you want to go live like those Moabites over there? Or do you want to stay with the real God? So think about it before you, you know, you shouldn't have to think about it too long before you decide. But once in a while, you know, go have some fun with a Moabite. But and in chapter 5, he goes over the Ten Commandments. He talks about how on Mount Sinai, God made the covenant. And he was the one who was there. He was the one that stood between God and the people. He became the mediator of the covenant. Just like Jesus is the mediator of the new covenant, because he stands between God and the people as the mediator, capital M. Moses was the mediator, little m, of the old covenant. Moses says, I stood there on the mountain while all this happened. And then he restates the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue. And you can, you know, you probably don't have to read those for your homework because you know what they were. And he reminds the people that they were afraid when all this was happening. You never saw this kind of thing happen with any of these, you know, gods when somebody made this thing and said, you know, this is the god of water. You know, you could pray to this all day. And it's never going to do the signs and wonders that you guys saw. You're never going to hear its voice talking through the fire. It gets me pretty excited. So it says, there's none beside him. There is none beside him. You know, God says, there's nobody beside me. You know, it's not like me, and then there's like this other God over here who's, you know, he's quite not quite as powerful as I am, and then there's this other God over here who's a little less powerful than I am, but he's, no, he says, there's nobody beside me. For who is there of all flesh who has heard the voice of the living God speaking from the midst of a fire as we have and lived? So at the end of chapter 5, because chapter 6 is going to blow everybody away, but at the end of chapter 5, God tells Moses to hear him and teach the people. Remember at Sinai, they were afraid of all the stuff they saw. They said, this is too much for us to handle. So have God talk to Moses, and then Moses can talk to us. And that'll be a lot easier. They saw a lot of power, and they were frightened in their humanity, as we would be if there's fire and smoke over there and rumbling and stuff. But then, you know, the Moses then tells them what God told him. And then when you fast forward to Jesus as Messiah, you know, he's God in a form that people can hear, people can understand him. People can, you know, instead of the mountain with the fire and stuff, they see a man that they talk to who's God. You know, the fullness of the Godhead dwells in him, Colossians chapter 1. So it's kind of like it carries forward that now another mediator talks to us in a way that we can understand it so that we're not afraid. So I think that's pretty cool.